All right, the last case in our docket for this panel is Marvin Kendall, Midget versus Commonwealth, Mr. Evans and Mr. Uberman. Yeah. Good morning, Mr. Evans. Would you care to reserve any of your 15 minutes for rebuttal?
Can I reserve approximately 8 minutes for rebuttal, if I may?
You can reserve exactly 8 minutes if you wish to. So.
I'd like to, Your Honor.
I'm glad for you to start whenever you're ready.
May it please the Court, my name is Greg Evans. I'm with the Virginia Beach Public Defender's Office, and I'm here today on behalf of Marvin Midget, who was tried in Virginia Beach on a charge of perjury. And I'd like to start with addressing the issue regarding the collateral estoppel first, if I may. It is the circumstances where he'd first been tried on the red light case.
Counsel, I hate to interrupt you so early in your argument, but it seems to me that the crux of the question in reference to the collateral estoppel issue is whether the testimony about the veracity of the tape was already litigated and determined in the red light trial. Would that be fair to say?
That's fair.
And if that's the case, the court at one point, after making its determination, indicates that the tape is to be reserved for further testing of accuracy. How does that impact your argument about as to whether there was a determination as to the accuracy of the tape?
Purpose for reserving the tape, and I think it's actually then the Commonwealth attorney who proceeds further in the investigation as opposed to court. The court does hold on to the tape, I think is an accurate statement. But the ruling in the case is something which determines whether or not that issue has been addressed.
And well, let me follow up on that, because isn't the ruling here, obviously your client was acquitted in the earlier proceedings.
Yes, sir.
And that is a fact that certainly, to the extent it's binding on anything, but the only thing that adjudicates, it seems to me, is that the Commonwealth at least failed in its burden to establish guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. It seems to me, to the extent there's any factual matter established that's relevant to the proceedings before us, is that the recording that was introduced at the prior proceeding was admissible. Not that it was necessarily accurate. It was admitted, and a decision was made, obviously based in part upon that, or at least inferentially in part upon that, that the Commonwealth's evidence failed to establish your client's guilt beyond a reasonable doubt for the traffic violation. But it seems to me the only fact that was clearly adjudicated with respect to that recording is that it was admissible in the earlier proceeding, not that it was necessarily factually accurate.
I think we can determine, based upon what we know about what happened to the hearing, that the reliance on the video was something the judge relied upon in making his determination.
Well, if that were the case, it seems to me in every case of perjury where there was a deposition or a affidavit or any writing that asserted a fact that turned out to be clearly false and made under oath, the Commonwealth would be bound by that, and no perjury prosecution could ever proceed.
I wouldn't go that far, but I would say if the evidence that is submitted and is utilized by the court is a basis for decision in making that determination, then yes, you could not proceed on a perjury in that case unless some other evidence comes out that could not under any circumstances be found before, such as if he then goes and tells other people, yeah, I faked or lied about this, or a co-conspirator comes in and says, yeah, I lied, and we have this plot or stuff like that.
But Mr. Evans, it seems to me that what you're relying on is the inference that was made by the court simply by the admission of the tape. Again, I hate, maybe I wasn't clear last time, but if the court has indicated, and it's the court that indicates that it's to be held for determination of accuracy, how could the court have made some type of finding about whether the tape was accurate? Doesn't that indicate the contrary?
I think that indicates the court wanted to have it looked at for purposes of perhaps the officer or for whatever other reason they have. But the court, in making its determination, is making what is at that point what it's basing its fact finding on. In this case, we don't just have the bare order, and there was no court reporter there. We don't have just the bare order that of an acquittal. We have his statements from the officer that the judge told him he was making his basis upon the videotape.
But that, it seems to me that an interpretation that is reasonable to put upon that statement by the court is simply that, on the one hand, the officer testified that the violation occurred. The defendant, your client, introduced this recording indicating that the violation did not occur. The trial court simply concluded that at best the evidence was in equipoise and elected not to conclude that the evidence established your client's guilt of the traffic violation beyond a reasonable doubt. Does the prior proceeding establish any more than that?
I think it does. According to the officer's testimony, the judge told him he was basing his decision on the court. And it, I don't want to paraphrase, I think the exact quotes are on page 1.
He essentially says he's got to go with the tape. Is that fair to say? The trial court, according to what the officer says.
Says, yes, he was informing me, this is the officer's answer, yes, he was informing me that he was looking at the video and he had to go by the video.
But didn't he also, didn't the officer also then testify that he was not making any comments on the officer's credibility? So I think that circles back to the question that Judge Humphreys just asked.
I think that clarifies that he's clearly making his decision based upon the video itself.
Well, then the logical extension of that is basically a conclusion that the officer must have been committing perjury. Because, you know, which would then be binding on all future proceedings. And I'm not sure you can go that far either.
I'm not sure how there would have been a future proceeding where that issue for his testimony.
Well, I mean, hypothetically, if there had been a future proceeding of some sort, it seems to me that your argument, the logical extension of your argument is that the Commonwealth would be bound by a conclusion that the officer had committed perjury because the trial court rejected his testimony.
I think the Commonwealth would be bound by the fact that the video was a true and accurate video because the officer, the judge had relied on that and ruled upon that and incorporated his decision. And I don't think the collateral estoppel is limited to just the bare bones of the actual elements of the case, as is done in the Nash case. We had a circumstance where the issue was whether or not she'd stolen these coins.
Well, the line of cases from Ash versus Swinson that deal with collateral estoppel, you know,
yes,
which of course is derivative of the Fifth Amendment issues, all state that you have to be able to make a definitive conclusion as to the factual. For example, we have the recent case, the name is flown out of my head, off the top of my head, but the recent case from our Supreme Court, it deals with the murder case out of Southampton County where a general district court made an affirmative finding that a defendant had not possessed or fired a weapon, which then had the collateral effect of preventing a conviction for murder, because that was a definitive factual finding that was adjudicated by the same parties and against the Commonwealth. We don't have that situation here. It seems to me what we have here is a finding that your client was not guilty of a traffic infraction, but we don't have an affirmative finding that that he was traveling at the speed or the traffic light was in the condition that it was as reflected in the recording. It simply did no more than raise a reasonable doubt.
I don't think it's necessary that you have to have the judge finding and specifically putting in the order that he's going to rely on this testimony to life.
Well, that's what a general verdict is. I mean, a general verdict, I mean, if a jury acquits, you know, we don't presume the defendant is innocent. I mean, they're innocent only because they're innocent until proven guilty, but the jury's verdict of not guilty really establishes a failure of the Commonwealth to meet its burden of proof.
It does, and then as part of collateral estoppel, especially in a criminal case, you can't go and then argue, well, it's only a finding that there's not probable cause, therefore you haven't established defendant proof that you're not guilty of the perjury. I mean, if there's just not probable cause, if there's not enough evidence to overcome reasonable doubt as to the charge, and there's not evidence to overcome reasonable doubt as far as the evidence that's alleged and pursued and ruled upon. That's why in the circumstances, and once again, to go to the Nash case of whether or not where she'd gotten the coins herself, even though that wasn't an essential element of where that she stole them, go back and to retry that issue of whether or not she lied about where she got.
Well, except there wasn't the difference in the Nash case that it was a part of her testimony in defense, and so the court had already weighed the evidence in Nash, that being the determination as to why collateral estoppel was applicable in that case. Here, it doesn't seem. In fact, it seems perhaps to the contrary that the court's made any determination about the accuracy of the tape, which seemed to be a part and core of the perjury charge.
I want you to answer Judge Malvo's question, but I also want to point out you're into your rebuttal time. So please go ahead and answer her question.
I think the difference is actually the opposite. In the Nash case, we don't have a statement from the court that they're relying on the testimony about where she got the coins or make a definite determination upon that. You're always going to have the weighing and making the verdict. In this case, not only have the weighing and making the verdict, and they have to be weighing the evidence at that point, whether acquittal or not, we actually have a statement from the judge as interpreted by the Commonwealth's evidence that they were basing that decision on the videotape. So I think it's even stronger in this case that that videotape, whether or not you can rely on that, it's true, therefore true and accurate, is a basis for his decision. And even if it's just that it raises reasonable doubts for him, then those reasonable doubts are established and you're stopped from trying to come against them. They clearly did in this case what is not desired is to come back and decide you think they're lying about what they presented or what they testified to, and you want to come back and retry it as a perjury case. They didn't come back and try and retry whether or not, he incidentally said he'd owned the car, or he incidentally said 3 days later he was somewhere else. They went and tried it back again on the very videotape, which was the basis for the judge's decision. They did a do-over using that, and that's exactly what the collateral estoppel doctrine is designed to avoid. And I'm going to reserve the rest of my time for that, but I'm not waiving any of the arguments on the other one.
We understand. Yeah, just under 5 minutes. Mr. Rubin?
May I please support Dave Rubin on behalf of the Commonwealth? I'm just going to jump right into it with respect to collateral estoppel. The Commonwealth has conceded that both the first and fourth elements have been met. We're really focusing on
the question is what factual issue was adjudicated in the General District Court here?
Yes, Your Honor. And I think in this case, there's not much doubt that in the traffic-related matter, the issue that was adjudicated was whether Mr. Majed ran a red light. And of course, that issue was adjudicated against the Commonwealth. He was acquitted of that offense.
Counsel,
yes.
I hate to interrupt you as early, but I guess what's good for one is good for the other. It seems to me that the argument that Appellant is making is that there is an inference that the court made, a factual finding about the accuracy of the tape simply by the admittance. Why wouldn't that be correct? Because isn't it a gatekeeping function that the court has to make about whether the evidence is accurate or correct before it comes in?
I don't think so, Your Honor. And I think in this case, as Judge Humphreys pointed out before, the court had before it a videotape. In this case, what I think is very salably sensitive has been an altered videotape that shows Mr. Majed proceed through a green light. He's hearing from an officer that, well, he proceed through a red light, some additional details, but I don't think it's a package deal. I think that all we know at this point with respect to the video, that is either it all comes in and the judge accepts it for everything, including the fact that Mr. Majed, did or did not run a red light, but the sun's position in the sky, the flow of traffic, where the officer's car was positioned. But here, in this case, I think ultimately what the admission of that video in the traffic court does is simply that. The trial court admitted it, the trial court reviewed it, and clearly had some questions about it because it ordered the flash drive held, and it expressly told the officer, Officer Hagen, that the court's acquittal had no bearing on his credibility as an officer.
How do you interpret the terms litigated in the elements that have to be shown in collateral estoppel? What does litigated mean to you?
To me, it means essentially the elements of the offense. In this case,
no. Well, that the fact at issue in a collateral estoppel challenge has to be litigated. What is it? Does it have to be determined? Does it have to be correctly determined? I don't see any cases that say that. Does it matter if it's litigated and not correctly determined? Does it matter if there is no finding of fact? What does litigated mean?
Well, Your Honor, I agree. It's open to interpretation. But I think what it means is, did the trial court rely upon that in reaching its
The rest rule? Of the test answers that part of it. It doesn't say, did the court rely on it? I can read you the rest of the test. It says all you have to have is a valid judgment, and there was a valid judgment in this case. We don't perhaps agree with it, and we know there are problems. But all the elements that are necessary are covered. The question is, what is litigated? What is the fact that is now the issue of being collaterally estopped from being litigated again? What does litigated mean, in your view? But the case law.
And I think the case law recognizes that by saying how difficult the collateral estoppel is.
But it doesn't, I don't say any case that says it has to be litigated correctly.
Well,
it doesn't say a finding of fact has to be expressed. It has to be litigated. I think collateral estoppel is about litigation. It's not a determination.
I agree with Judge Annunziata, and to follow up on it, it seems to me that what we've got here is litigation as to the issue of whether or not a traffic light, the traffic regulations were violated in effect of whether a red light was run, essentially.
Yes, Your Honor.
That has been adjudicated. There's no mm-hmm. question about that.
Right.
To the extent the Commonwealth can ever rely in the future, for example, if there was going to be an indictment for reckless driving based upon running the red light, it seems to be collateral estoppel would present a huge problem for the Commonwealth in establishing that.
Yes, Your Honor.
But if, on the other hand, what wasn't litigated was whether or not the video was fraudulently obtained or forged or manufactured or whatever word you want to use, that clearly was not litigated. I think we're in this gray area somewhere in between those two things where the court, the video was tendered as an exhibit in the earlier proceeding. It was admitted. Now, I think it's fair to say that not every exhibit or every testimony is necessarily reliable or truthful, because otherwise, I don't know how we'd ever get a conviction in any case where there was opposing testimony. So at some point, the fact finder has to pick and choose. And the ultimate question, it seems to me, in terms of a verdict or an ultimate adjudication of the litigation in a criminal case, is whether the Commonwealth met its burden of proof or not. And clearly that's been adjudicated, and double jeopardy principles prevent anything that's going to undermine that.
Yes, Your Honor.
Now, but that seems to me is a different question from whether or not the fact of the video being authentic versus it being what amounts to a forgery or a fraudulently manufactured video has not been litigated.
Correct, Your Honor. And I think...
Well, it depends on what you mean by litigated. Was it examined by the court as to whether it should be admissible on the basis that it was reliable? I'm sure that was part of it somewhere, at least by implication. I don't think under collateral estoppel principles it has to be litigated to the ultimate conclusion, does it?
Well, not to the ultimate conclusion,
okay.
Your Honor.
It wasn't adjudicated in the sense that the red light issue, which was litigated and adjudicated and reached a final verdict.
Isn't the issue in Jones, the one that's in question here, and I'll quote from Jones, the factual issue must be sought to be litigated must have actually been litigated in the prior proceeding. Here the factual issue sought to be litigated is whether the video is fraudulent or not.
Well, I think, Your Honor, the factual issue to be litigated in a perjury trial is whether Mr. Majette's affirmation that it was an accurate representation of what happened. Because, again, it's
a fair point. Yeah.
It's to Mr. Majette's advantage to encapsulate the video as, well, the video is what the court relied upon in the first trial, and the video, the authenticity of the video, is what should have been collaterally estopped at the second trial.
So to follow up on Judge Nunziata's question, is the argument, or is the issue then before us, whether or not the trial court having admitted the video, thereby implicitly accepting the then defendant's representation, the current appellant's representation, that the video was authentic, is now binding on future proceedings?
Well, I think it's part of the question, Your Honor, and if I could, just by citing two cases by way of example, in the Supreme Court of Virginia, Rhodes versus Commonwealth, that was the case where the police pulled over the defendant. He had cigarettes that were wet with PCP in his Mustang. He was tried for possession of PCP. He was acquitted. He was subsequently tried for manufacturing PCP, and the defendant made a collateral estoppel defense. He argued before trial that he should be entitled to rely upon his previous acquittal in the possession case. The Commonwealth disagreed and said, it's not the possession of the cigarettes that's at issue. It is the presence of the cigarettes. And because the cigarettes are wet, that goes towards the manufacturing process. So I think just because, and ultimately there, both the trial court and the Supreme Court agreed with the Commonwealth. So I don't think simply that issue was brought up during a prior proceeding is the standard that triggers a collateral estoppel defense. I also think in this court's on-bank decision in Savchenko, is particularly helpful because there, the court probably remembers the defendant was charged originally with driving on a suspended license. He was acquitted based upon his false testimony that he was not driving on the date of the offense. During the subsequent perjury trial, the Commonwealth attempted to prove the perjury by having the same officer who pulled him over testify, I was there, he was driving. Now, of course, the Commonwealth was precluded from doing that, but this court stated in a majority opinion that the Commonwealth was not precluded from introducing additional aspects of evidence, such as, you know, his alibi, whether he admitted it to other people bragging about it after the fact, those types of things. I think that's exactly what the Commonwealth did in this case.
Counsel, what do you make from the fact that the court, according to the author of the conclusion of the traffic matter, was referring the tape over for authenticity?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
The court, at the end of the traffic matter, was holding the tape and indicated it wanted to test it for authenticity.
Sir.
How does that impact whether there was any type of decision made on the authenticity of the tape?
I think it certainly goes to the bearing whether the trial court put any credence into the videotape. I think the fact that he held it expressly, he didn't order its forensic examination, but obviously that's what the Commonwealth did subsequently, combined with telling the officer that he didn't have his credibility, goes towards the fact that the traffic court judge did not necessarily put a lot of water into the authenticity of the video. Rather, he simply could have proved, again, in a general verdict, that the Commonwealth hadn't met its burden to prove beyond a reasonable doubt.
How does that impact the litigated part of the collateral estoppel analysis?
Your Honor, in every case where collateral estoppel, or where the issue, rather, has deemed to be litigated, it's required a court to have ruled on it. And again,
if you go back to the articulation of the test, I think it's a little bit more helpful, clear on what is at issue. But the third factor is the factual issue that is now the subject of a collateral issue challenge. The factual issue must have been essential to the judgment rendered in the prior proceeding. It says nothing about determination, but it does say it has to be a fact that was part of what actually was decided ultimately. It doesn't have to be the ultimate fact. That was really my question. Are there subsidiary facts that could be the subject of collateral estoppel challenge? I think the test suggests yes. I haven't found a case that says it, but there's nothing about a determination. There's nothing about an accurate determination. It says the factual issue determined, and if this is the accuracy of the video, the factual issue must have been essential to the judgment rendered in the prior. That's the question we have to answer. Is
and
it not?
In this case, Your Honor, I think it's fair to argue that it was not essential to the traffic court.
That's a fair argument.
To have reviewed that video. Obviously, what the traffic court ruled on and held was that he didn't run a red light.
Right.
What the perjury court was faced with was the video authentic, but rather, did Mr. Majet lie in traffic court when he affirmed that it was an authentic and accurate representation of what happened?
Why did the court say, I must go with the video, if it wasn't essential to the adjudication of the red light?
I don't want to speculate what the court decided. Obviously, we don't have a transcript.
Yeah.
And the best that Mr. Majet can do is attempt to bootstrap the language of the officer saying, well, the judge told me he looked at the video and he had to go by it. I think it's a stretch to essentially take that and then interpret that as litigating an essential element of the offense of running a red light, especially, Mr. Majet was certainly under no obligation to introduce this video. He simply could have said, I didn't run a red light. That didn't work for him previously. So
we certainly could use more clear case law on this matter, because I'm not sure it's developed as fully as I would like to see, but have some questions myself. So,
Your Honor, I think, again, in this case, Mr. Majet's his argument, his line of reasoning, is very similar to the dissent's case in Savchenko.
DeSantis?
I'm sorry, the dissent's
The dissent in Savchenko.
There, the majority held that, again, this is where the case where the majority held that the Commonwealth wasn't constrained to prove the perjury by means other than what was originally presented. So it doesn't have to be just a red light. It could be like in this case where you have the expert opinion that the videos were altered, the expert opinion that the light or the sun was not at the same location in the sky, that the officer's car was not in the same position.
They weren't central. Your point is they are not central to the whether he ran
the
red light.
Yeah, that they're not limited to just if he ran the red light. And again, in Savchenko, there, the dissent held that the perjury case or the subsequent perjury case should have been to dismiss, quote, to acknowledge that collateral estoppel must bar retrial in a rare situation where a single fact was disputed in each prosecution, and that fact was the same in both. And in this case, Majette is trying to make that single fact the authenticity of the video. And in fact, in the first instance, in the traffic case, it's did he run a red light? In the perjury trial, it's did he lie about the authenticity of the video itself? And specifically, the majority rebuked the dissent and said that in the trial for driving on a suspended license, the fact about which Savchenko allegedly testified falsely was that he was not driving on the date of the offense. An important part, I think, to help that the dissenters reasoned that any evidence which proved that Savchenko testified falsely as to that fact must necessarily prove, at least by implication, that he was driving off the offense date, the very fact which the Commonwealth is collaterally stopped from proving. So the majority went on to say if that was the standard, then there would never be prosecutions for perjury where a defendant had testified falsely about an element of the actual offense. And I see that my time has expired, so unless there are any questions, I'll rest on the remainder of the argument, including the second assignment of error, as on brief.
Thank you, Mr. Rubin. Mr. Evans? Mr. Evans, as you're walking up, let me ask you this question, I'll put this hypothetical to you. Suppose, hypothetically, we have a situation where we have this same charge, running a red light.
Okay.
There's no dash cam video like we have here, but the case goes to trial in general district court. The officer testifies to, you know, that he saw the defendant run the red light. Defendant says, testifies under oath, I did not run the red light. The light was green. The defendant is acquitted based on, you know, that evidence. A week later, it turns out the police officer discovers that there's a traffic camera that catches the whole thing on video that definitively shows that the defendant actually, you know, testified falsely and the light was in fact red. Would the fact of the prior acquittal prevent a perjury prosecution under those circumstances?
I think you would have to interpret your scenario very narrowly, that the really only evidence defendants presented was the light was green.
Yeah, he testified under oath the light was green.
And that was the only evidence that he presented.
And there's photographic evidence that that's not accurate.
If that's the only evidence that he could have relied upon, and the video camera is something the Commonwealth would have had access to, I think, or could have looked up or gotten beforehand, then I think that would bar that perjury conviction.
So just to make clear, I understand your answer.
Trial.
So would the subsequent prosecution for perjury be barred by the acquittal? Is that your position?
I think in that case it would. I think in that case it would, even if there isn't a statement by the judge saying, yeah, I'm making my decision based upon the fact that you've made these statements, but because there's nothing else that decision could have been based upon, and the statements that it was green and then whether or not there's reasonable doubt. Now, there's a million things that could be different. If there's evidence afterwards that could not have been gone through or looked in, like persons confessing they committed perjury, the conspiracy.
The obvious question is, how would you ever get a perjury conviction in the absence of a confession if collateral estoppel bars prosecution for perjury where there's been an acquittal of a prior proceeding?
It would have to be perjury for testimony that's unrelated to what the judge based their decision on.
Unrelated.
I think that is the fundamental.
I didn't hear that.
It would have to be testimony based upon factors which are not part of the basis for the judge's decision in the acquittal. For example, Peter, I think, is the name of the case, where the issue is, did you steal the dog? And at trial, he says, I didn't steal the dog. Did you hear anything about the dog afterwards? No, I've not heard anything about the dog afterwards. They can't go back into whether he took the dog.
Yeah, but in Pijor, the difference was the fact that because he said he hadn't seen the dog, and that's the reason why the court found that they could hold him guilty of the perjury.
Right, you can go after for statements which aren't the basis for the decision, but as a practical matter, you can't go after him for statements that were the basis for the decision, and that is the determination that's been made at this point by the Supreme Court of the United States and of Virginia, that you're not allowed
what
to
relive. What about counsel's position about Savchenko But Savchenko indicates essentially that you can use and utilize other information to prove the perjury. Why wouldn't that be applicable here?
would be applicable here because in this case there's not new evidence that was impossible to come upon later on. The only thing they presented that was different is they had an expert.
Wouldn't the new expert or the new testimony have been or evidence been the testimony of the expert?
They got an expert to take a look at the tape. That's not new evidence or someone confessing they perjured or a conspiracy. What that's most like is the case of Nash, where when they retried it, this was not allowed, they brought in an expert to testify that the coin machine she said she got the coins from could not have dispensed those coins. And that was described by the judges who even felt it needed to be commented on for the judge's concurrence. It's just a rehash of the facts from the original case. In this case, the expert, aside from just looking at the video that was already in evidence, which everyone had there, and which, incidentally, as far as litigation, was commented on in that trial in general district court about whether or not this was a valid video. The officer Hagen testified in general district court that that's not the correct video, that's not what happened, testified and pointed out all the things that he thought were wrong of it in general district court, and those matters were litigated. And this is based upon his testimony in circuit court as to what was said and done in general district court. If you're going to go after him for perjury, it has to be something other than for the basic facts that were the basis of that decision. That is precluded.
Does it
that
have
is,
to be the only basis for the decision?
I don't think those facts would have to be the only basis, but it has to be a clear basis for the decision and part of what they
essential,
consider.
Essential, in fact, essential.
Agreed, essential. In
but
this
does
case,
that mean it has to be the only?
I don't think it has to be the only basis.
Evidence.
Because once basis. Again,
well, I can't find the answer to that yet, but I
obviously
the
I like the Nash case best.
I see.
Which, of course, is unpublished.
Well, we have a good chance of doing something.
It's not binding. It's persuasive, but it's not binding.
Yeah, interesting.
But it doesn't have to be something just one of the fixed elements of the offense. It can be facts that are a basis of support, which the judge clearly was
can there
considering.
Be two facts that are essential to the basis of the decision? Can there be two different sets of facts that are essential?
If there's two central facts that are essential and the judge relied on both, then I think you'd be barred from going after either.
Okay. Well, that's the question, because that's partially what we have here, arguably.
But I think the decision that's made in these line of cases is we're not going to allow the perjury. We're going to give up the right to go after people perjury because we're going to put a higher balance on the collateral estoppel. And that's why prior to these cases in the federal courts and coming down, I think the old law of Virginia, before the federal courts intervened, was that you can prosecute perjury. And they were in line of that. We want to be able to prosecute perjury. We're not going to use collateral estoppel to bar. That's not the law anymore. The decision is made to prioritize collateral estoppel, even if the courts find it distasteful, if that there's otherwise a way to prosecute perjury, because we don't want to do the do-over situation. You want the judge to have to make that decision on the spot, and you're going to make your decisions on the spot, and those decisions, both as to your finding and whatever the basis are there, are final, and you can't go back.
Thank you, counsel. Your time is up. We will come down and greet counsel, and then court will stand adjourned.
Thank you.